The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, March 2019, Volume 20, Number 3. And this is the first of five installments of the March issue. On this month's cover, we have a close-up of Oprah as she looks down. Her right hand is held up at her shoulder height with her fingers relaxed and curled, and she's wearing a wide gold band ring. She's got on a white blouse, and her hair is pulled back from her forehead, and it falls just below her shoulders. And her perfect makeup gives her this amber glow, and her lipstick is a soft peachy coral. And the quote from Oprah on the cover is, "Want to hear the most beautiful, complicated, perfectly imperfect word I know? Family." When we look at behind the scenes, we have not Oprah, but we have four models, if you will, all dressed in black and white. Each of them is wearing black track suits with gray and white tuxedo stripes. Some of them were wearing white sneakers. One of the women's wearing some black sandals with a tall heel. And all of their tops are black and white checks or stripes or just with other embellishments staying all within black and white. The headline is A Collab That Cares. It's back and better than ever. This year's O, the O magazine collection for Talbots, is not only cute but super comfortable. To show it off, we enlisted four multi-talented women: Food Network star Katie Lee, fitness guru Angela Manuel Davis, actor Katie Mixon, and singer-actor Amber Riley. The playful, relaxed spirit of the five-piece line, designed to encourage self-care, and the charitable initiative behind it. A portion of the net proceeds go to Dress for Success, made our models feel excited and honored to take part. Mixon said, quote, "There is the most incredible power in women helping women. The photo shoot was pure joy." The behind-the-scenes pictures show Riley holding this amazing bouquet of black and white and gray balloons with polka dots on some of them. And then we have Mixon with her kind of auburn hair that falls below the shoulder length, getting her hair and makeup touched up. And then there's a picture of Glassman standing at the racks of clothes. Adam Glassman says, "I'm so proud of this collection. It can go from work to play." And in another note, this marks the fourth year O has teamed with Talbots to create a line of fabulous clothing with a purpose. And here are five items from this collection. The joggers are $69.50. They are black, as I said, with a gray and white tuxedo stripe on the side and a little zipper down at the ankle. There's a sweater, kind of loose fitting with a V-neck, and it's in a really soft kind of woven gray with some barely discernible horizontal stripes on it, and it's $79.50. Then there's a t-shirt for $59.50 that boat necked, and it's white with slender black stripes that are about 2 inches apart, and it's got some gray binding at the neckline and at the shirt tail hem, and also your sort of sweatshirt style cuffs. Now there's a white jacket for $84.50, and it zips, and it has the pockets at an angle on the front, and they have black and white stripes and zippers. A nice little detail there. And the collar is black with thin white stripes, as are the cuffs. And then the last item for $89.50 is a gray dress. It's that kind of heather gray of sort of sweatshirt material. It has a bit of a scoop neck, a little cap sleeve. It's a shift, but it has a tie over on the left side, so it kind of bunches up, pulls in, and gives a little bit of form to the dress. And the tie is probably about 3 inches wide and kind of short. So it's just sewn in there to bunch up that left side. And now, here we go from Oprah. And we have a picture of Oprah wearing some off-white pants and a blue and cream color plaid shirt, loosely buttoned over a gray tank. And she has some well-worn hiking boots on. And she's standing out in the woods on a dirt road with her hands up and the sun shining on her face. And there's a quote, "We've given our pages a lively makeover because a little refresh is always a good thing." And the magazine does have a slightly different look and feel this month. Some of the typefaces are a little different. And so let's hear what Oprah has to say. "With all due respect to the Dunphys, Pritchetts, and Tuckers of TV fame, the families you'll meet in this issue are truly modern indeed. One happy household consists of a mom, two kids, and the two gay men those kids call dad. Well, okay, one is Pappy and the other Daddy. Another is a single woman and her children, two daughters from one sperm donor, as well as her mother and sister, the lot of them sharing a suburban colonial amid more nuclear clans. Still others expanded joyously as a result of the miracle of genetic testing, and they all delight in a thriving kinship every bit as strong as a traditional family's. Here's a question I've been mulling lately. What does it really mean to be woke? This month, a handful of candid writers are taking a hard look at themselves to see if they're doing all they can to stand up for social justice, or if they're sometimes a little too content to turn a blind eye. It's a difficult thing to ponder, for sure, but so worthwhile. And if you feel like something's different about O, you're right. We've given our pages a lively makeover because a little refresh is always a good thing. Reimagining is what it's all about this month. Our notion of families, our worldview, our magazine. I hope you always find ways to see your life anew, too. Enjoy, Oprah." And as we usually do at the beginning of this first installment each month, let's move over to the reading room and look at 10 titles to pick up now. And the first one is The Falconer by Dana Zapnick. A basketball-obsessed tomboy navigates the schoolyard's complex gender politics in this ladybird-like love letter to an unconventional girlhood set in 1990s Manhattan. The second title is Landfall by Thomas Mallon. Girl meets boy meets hapless politician in this comic saga by a lauded writer of historical fiction as two increasingly conflicted acolytes of George W. Bush improbably fall in love during W.'s train wreck of a second term. The third title, The Age of Light by Whitney Sherer. This sensual portrait of the artist as a young muse fictionalizes the life of Lee Miller, a model and lover of Man Ray's, with dreams of becoming a famous photographer herself. Like Paris in the 1930s, Sherer's first novel is a radiant clash of romance and reality. The fourth title is Trailblazer by Dorothy Butler Gilliam. Quote, "You've got so many handicaps, you'll probably make it," end of quote. Gillian's Columbia professor predicted, referring to the fact that she was female and African-American and inspired to be a journalist. She did make it, and then some, becoming the first black woman Washington Post reporter in 1961. In this essential memoir, Gillian recounts her stellar six-decade career. The fifth title is How to Disappear by Akiko Bush. Drawing on literature, reportage, and personal experience, an essayist meditates on the virtues of disconnecting and how, quote, to step back from the theater of exposure, to find the powerful interiority, that is interiority, that can be gained when we remain out of view, end of quote. The sixth title is Bangkok Wakes to Rain by Prichai Sudbanthad. Through shifting time periods and viewpoints, this prismatic debut peels back the layers of a Thai manse whose past residents, among them a disillusioned American missionary and a world-weary jazz musician, still haunt its hallways metaphorically and literally. The seventh title, The World According to Fanny Davis by Bridget M. Davis. The novelist and teacher illuminates the life of her iron-willed mother, who in the 1960s and 70s spearheaded Detroit's shadow economy through an illegal lottery known as The Numbers, in order to bolster both her family and the city's burgeoning black middle class. The eighth title is Sounds Like Titanic by Jessica Chinchita Hindman. Hindman's outrageously funny, shrewdly meta-memoir recalls her young adulthood as a wet-behind-the-ears Appalachian who scores a job as a fake violinist for a renowned composer, pretend-playing her way through sold-out shows to pay off her college debt. And the ninth title to pick up now, Nobody's Looking at You by Janet Malcolm. The minimalist palette of a legendary designer, virtuoso Chinese pianist, Tolstoy's archetypal dreamscapes. All and more spring to life in stylish, erudite essays by a donjon of literary nonfiction. And finally, number 10, The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls by Anissa Gray. The relationship between three middle-aged sisters is tested when the eldest is sent to jail. The iniquities of the justice system, the fortitude of women of color, and the bittersweet struggle to connect are rendered ravishingly in this big-hearted novel. And now there's one more item on this page, as there usually is a sidebar, and the title of this little review is called Rinse, Repeat. And the book that is being reviewed is Vacuum in the Dark. Vacuum in the Dark, Jen Began's second novel, opens with Mona, a young house cleaner in New Mexico, scrubbing excrement from a soap dish while conversing with an imaginary Terry Gross. The air not so fresh today, Ter. A follow-up to the riotous Pretend I'm Dead, this is what a sequel should be. Darker, sexier, funnier. But turns nutty and forlorn. The novel is split into four semi-episodic sections linked by Mona's intimacy woes. The mystery of the poop culprit frames an imprudent affair between Mona and her married employer, a tattooed brooder whose wife is blind. Elsewhere, Mona agrees to model nude for a pair of Hungarian painters, an arrangement that exposes her insecurities over her own artistic ambitions, as well as the cracks in the couple's relationship. Quote, "We are all ghosts in each other's stories," end of quote, Mona pontificates to Terry. Yet in these pages, she is much more than a specter. Brash, deadpan, and achingly troubled, Mona emerges as that problematic friend you're nonetheless always thrilled to see. And while there's a refreshed look to the magazine, we fortunately still have one of my sort of favorite parts each month is to see how the creative folks at O are going to give us the Oprah O in the first page of the special section, the section of the magazine that changes each month. And this month, it's great. It is a close-up of a faded denim jacket. We've got a little bit of the collar. We've got a little bit of the top stitching of the yoke, just a little bit of the top stitching on that top pocket. And pens. There's a Wonder Woman pen. There's a pink heart. That's like the Valentine's Day candy. And this one says Girl Power, GRLPWR. And then there's one that has us like a sun with rays coming out from it and an eye in the middle. And the clouds below this pen say Stay Woke. There's a Black Lives Matter pen. And then in the middle is this great big yellow O. So it's got the little bit of the brass outline on the center of the O and the outside of the O, and it's sunshine yellow. March 2019. You may wear your wokeness on your sleeve or jacket, but are you as tuned in as you think? Join us for some soul-stirring, soul-searching. And the ties that bind can be varied indeed, as these unique families will happily tell you. So let's get to these articles. How woke are you? It takes courage, compassion, wide open eyes, and an equally open heart. But if you can heed the call of your conscience, if you can look bravely and honestly within, you can help nudge the world toward a better place. Join a few fellow travelers as they find their way forward. Let's start with this premise. You want the world to be safe and fair for all. You feel that difference should be celebrated, not feared. You believe humans owe one another respect, access, a chance. If that sounds like you, great news. You're a good person. But for your convictions to matter, you need to know what's going on behind your corner of the world. How are other people living? What keeps them from living better? If you're white, are you, by virtue of your skin's inherent privilege, part of what keeps them from living better? If you're a person of color, are you aware of the mechanisms that deny you similar privilege? To engage with such matters regularly, vigilantly, is to be, in a word, woke. In 2017, Merriam-Webster defined the term, quote, aware of and actively attentive to important facts and issues, especially issues of racial and social justice, end of quote. But then, woke was everywhere, in songs, speeches, think pieces. Then it became passé, slang divorced from its activist origins. But the work of wokeness can't stop simply because the word lost its cred. Ours is an age in which progress is under siege, but also one in which social justice and social media have melded into a force strong enough to topple villains. Be gone, hashtag MeTooPerps, and lift up heroes. Go, Parkland kids, go. In the 60s, we marched. Now we hashtag and march. An estimated 5 million strong at the 2017 Women's Marches. Of course, a wealth of public forums means more opportunities to misstep. For some, this breeds crippling anxiety, causing them to clam up before those who treat wokeness as a contest, a chance to prove they get it best and to shame those who get it less. To be woke, stay woke, live woke, what does it take? There are conversations to have with those who are different from you and with yourself about what your actions add or subtract. There is the mandate to not look away. From iPhone videos, rally chants, tear gas clouds, from any of it. Because here's another thing we owe one another, a witness. When we see systems that hurt and hinder, we owe it to the hindered to train our eyes on their plight. If we are being wronged, we owe it to ourselves and anyone in a similar position to make our voices heard. To be woke is to see and say what has gone unseen, unspoken. We have eyes, voices. We can offer both. Now, from Tony Adeyemi, who is the author of, most recently, the young adult novel Children of Virtue and Vengeance, we have this contribution entitled Sleep No More. All I needed was a shirt. It should have been simple, my usual size and store. Buying it wasn't supposed to ruin the world, but as I approached the familiar red logo, an H&M advertisement came to mind. It had featured a black boy wearing a hoodie that read, Coolest Monkey in the Jungle, and people were up in arms. Yo, you can't shop here, I thought. Twitter said it's canceled. It doesn't matter whether it was part of a collection of animal hoodies. You can't buy anything that contributes to black pain. But then, didn't his mom say everyone was upset over nothing? Maybe they just thought green looked good on the boy's skin. And if the model and the company are Swedish, does America's racist history of equating black people to primates even apply? In recent years, social consciousness has moved into the public arena as outrage constantly fills our timelines and feeds. It's easy to feel woke when we join the screaming masses. But what happens when we step away from our screens? How do we take all the awareness we've gained and turn it into concrete action, especially when the list of injustices grows by the day? Voter fraud in Georgia, the water crisis in Flint, the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. It's like trying to stay awake when you're exhausted. Eventually, keeping your eyes open becomes too much. Whether I'm buying a shirt or urging 50,000-plus followers to vote, I still fight the paralysis that comes with wanting to take the right action in a world that's on fire. We all have to keep fighting. We have to do what we can, where we can, staying awake no matter how comforting sleep may seem. Because while agonizing over a single shirt may never change the world, the awesome power of our collective actions will. The next contribution is called Fear and Loathing. Charlie Schneider, a writer in Brooklyn, wonders how many other white people feel it too, the humiliation of being forced to face your privilege. When I started seminary last year, I attended a mandatory discussion about undoing racism for around 40 white students, while in other rooms, students of color had their own discussions on the same theme. In our room, we talked about how we should, for other students' sake, attend to our whiteness while at school. Many offered suggestions. Don't ask people of color to explain what it's like to be people of color. Don't take it personally when you're called out for insensitivity. Don't reply that you meant well. Don't expect thanks for attempting to account for your whiteness and its privileges. Don't speak for longer than you should or feel entitled to speak or get mad when someone says you've spoken long enough. My thoughts ran like this. I agree. I agree. I agree. And I can't stand this. I heard the tone of my colleague's words as a dog would. No, no, bad. Go sit in the corner. Maybe some doses of that tone are useful as a corrective to privilege, but when another student asked if all this sounded a bit severe, I saw some nods. I nodded too. I suspect that the don'ts were born of shame. Many white people, while well-meaning, may nonetheless feel entitled to their privilege without realizing or wanting to admit it. And so we offer each other those hard-nosed don'ts instead of engaging our shame about those feelings. To interrogate that shame and what lies beneath it, I suspect white people need to undertake some compassionate discussion as much as, if not more than, they need a set of negative commandments. In fact, when I hear lists of don'ts like that, I sometimes feel such resistance that I want to throw out the whole enterprise of interrogating white privilege. The way we talk about it, not allowing anyone to feel defensive even for a minute, makes me feel more defensive, not less. In those moments, my heartbeat speeds up. Resentment at being presumed guilty of blindness to my privilege bubbles in my gut, alongside the suspicion that I am, in fact, sometimes guilty of blindness. I wonder how many white people feel the same way. What if we talked about how to care for each other's fear of being wrong and bad and unmasked? What if we'd hazarded some guesses in that breakout session as to why our fear exists? I have a few guesses myself. We fear we'll lose our privilege, and that we failed to ask the right questions of ourselves, and that we'll be revealed to ourselves as happily ignorant. We fear we're part of the problem, even as we masquerade as bearers of solutions. But fear is okay. It's a reflex. Shame about it won't help, and repressing that shame won't either. As a start to becoming woke, what if white people agreed it was fine to be afraid of being wrong and then helped each other be courageous in self-reflection? Imagine how it must feel to someone new to the idea of white privilege, not aware of systemic racism or its insidious effects, to be confronted about their whiteness. They might become angry, or maybe something worse, profoundly defiant, more secure in their prejudice. I ask myself how I can reach someone like that. I don't think it will be with don'ts. What I should have said in that classroom is that undoing white supremacy means white people need to care for their own discomfort just as they care for the suffering they might unwittingly inflict on people of color. Acknowledging that discomfort would be a start. Sitting with it, not resisting it, but also not letting it swamp us, would be a start. Asking each other questions instead of listing rules. The problems are vast, but there is a place for compassion. When all the breakout groups reconvened, a spokesperson from each one summarized the conversations they'd had. The summary I remember best came from a student in the Latina group, which has only 3 members in a school of 300 plus. He talked about how invisible he'd felt for most of his time at seminary, and how he and his 2 peers had discussed the importance of having tea together regularly in order to feel seen and supported. After all the back and forth in my head during my group's discussion, that mention of a cup of tea reminded me of something. White people confronting their fears with care works only when it's balanced with a certain awareness that our discomfort is a far easier burden than not being seen at all. And before we read the last contribution, let's look at a timeline that goes across several pages. Word gets around, the history of an especially fraught objective. In 1962, the New York Times publishes an essay on appropriation of black culture, If You're Woke, You Dig It, by William Melville Kelly, African-American novelist known in some quarters as Godfather of Woke. In 1972, Garvey Lives, a play by Barry Beckham about Jamaican activist Marcus Garvey, contains a stirring line, quote, I've been sleeping all my life, and now that Mr. Garvey done woke me up, I'm gone stay woke, end of quote. 1973 to 2007, woke largely fades from public view. In 2008, Erykah Badu's song Master Teacher brings Term back into mainstream with hook I Stay Woke, alluding to idea of snapping out of fanciful notions of racial equality. 2009, wokeness lands on Twitter, but rather than implying consciousness of oppression, it takes a literal meaning, referring simply to act of not falling asleep, as in church, trying to stay woke. 2013, pervasive police brutality ignites Black Lives Matter movement. Hashtag Stay Woke and hashtag Woke gain traction on social media, this time as a rallying cry. 2017, it's official. Woke added to dictionary, along with other timely terms like binge watch, humble brag, throw shade, microaggression, photobomb. Yowza. That was added too. 2017, Saturday Night Live pokes fun with Levi's Wokes skit, starring Ryan Gosling, advertising non-discriminatory jeans, genderless, sizeless, in equality-minding hashtag grab, not brown, but not brown, with no pockets, because not everyone has hands. 2018, released from inflated prison sentence, rapper Meek Mill puts out Stay Woke with lyrics, It was designed for us to fail, we still prevail through the hell. And now, our final article on this topic, Sisters in Arms. Ann Friedman and Amina Talsal, BFS, and co-host of the hit podcast Call Your Girlfriend on the joys of figuring out how to be woke with a pal. Ann Friedman says, here's the question on the minds of well-meaning white women like me. How do you get woke? Amina Talsal says, girl, I'm black. I've been woke. But all kidding aside, these days it seems anyone half paying attention is referred to as woke. And I wish people didn't think of it as a permanent status you achieve, as if they were once ignorant, then they got woke, and now they never say anything objectionable. Amina Tal, exactly. That's why I love that Florence Kennedy quote so much. Freedom is like taking a bath. You got to keep doing it every day. And though I get that it's hard to know what to do every day, I try to look to my friends. Much of what I understand about injustices that don't directly affect me comes from loving people affected by them and thinking about how they would like me to act. Amina Tau, yes, saying the right things online or having the right talking points at a dinner party are not more important than doing that kind of work. I learned that from you. Actions speak louder than words or hashtags. And, wait, I learned that from you. It's one thing to know that racism persists in hiring practices, and sure, it's good to post about it, but it's another to care about the issue because it affects my best friend. That would be you. And then to take action by, say, standing up for a colleague who is constantly assigned the shit work because she's the only woman of color in the conference room, because that's what I'd want someone to do for you. Amina Tal, I think the key is to learn things you don't know, and you can do that in some small way by reading books, especially so you don't burden the people in your life to teach you about their oppression. When I read Bell Hooks' Feminism is for Everybody, it was like being struck by lightning. It became a gateway to other incredible writers like Audre Lorde. Sister Outsider should be required reading for anyone who wants to understand sexism, racism, ageism, homophobia, and class. And Hooks' Ain't I a Woman blew my mind because I read it at a time when I'd never had a close friend who was a woman of color. Now I turn to memoir a lot when I want to understand an experience I don't have. Amina Tal, Brian Stevenson's memoir, Just Mercy, brought into focus a lot of things I didn't know about the African-American experience. Because I'm black, but not African-American, and didn't move to the States until college, there was a lot I had to learn about the criminal justice system and how it disproportionately punishes black folks. A nonfiction book I find myself recommending over and over is Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow. Everyone should understand mass incarceration, and this is a real call to action. And fiction can be just as good as memoir when it comes to exercising your empathy muscles. Two epic novels that have been so informative to me are Ye Gyasi's Homegoing and Minley Lee's Pachinko. Even though neither is about seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexican border, my mind drifts to the plot of these books when I read the news. Amina Tal, thank goodness for books. And it can be radical to immerse yourself in someone else's experience so that you're coming from an enlightened place. Amina Tal, definitely. There is so much pressure to say the right things. You're so afraid to say the wrong things because it gets at the fear that we're not perfect. And I often feel that, but empathy and solidarity are the way in. That's how you really start to see the world differently. Let's move now to the refresh section of the magazine. And we have a picture here of the back of a woman who's obviously just stopped from a workout. She has on a black sports bra. And we just see her hair pulled up and what look like beads of sweat on her back. It says, hot or not, high-intensity workouts are on fire. Trendy fitness studios like the Sweatshop in L.A. and Atlanta and Body NYC now offer classes in rooms hotter than 80 degrees. Heated sessions may help lower stress and burn slightly more calories. There are risks, though. If your body temp spikes above 104, which happened to one of 20 hot yoga participants in a 2015 study, heat stroke and seizures can occur, says John Porcari, Ph.D., an exercise physiologist at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. So get cleared by your doctor first and, quote, if you're dizzy, feel faint, or have a headache, stop and hydrate, end of quote, says Casey Mace Firebaugh, Ph.D., a professor of public health at Central Washington University. If you still can't stand the heat, get out of there. No gain is worth that kind of pain. And here's a tip on the sidebar. Hydrate right. Sip at least 8 ounces of water slowly to help keep it from sloshing around every 15 minutes during hot workouts. And on the next page, under the heading, Good Job, find your workflow with these helpful helpers. And the first one is a chair. Back up. Is your desk posture more slumped than straight? Try this modern chair with an ergonomic seat that beautifully supports your keister, or if you prefer to tuck and type, your knees. It is from Capisco Pulls by Hodge in Sprint Pink. It's $525, and you can find it at fully.com. And the base of the chair is white. It has 5 wheels, which are black, and it's got levers on it for you to adjust the seat. But the actual seat and the back are of a molded hard material, and it's in kind of a peachy pink. And the seat is molded almost exaggerated like a bicycle seat, so it's kind of higher in the middle and then molded down so your legs can comfortably rest on the edge. And then the back is almost like an upside down T shape so that the center of your back is supported, but your shoulder blades are free to move. Now, the next item, in the dark. When a 3 p.m. craving strikes, don't settle for vending machine potato chips. Instead, enjoy a rich chocolate bar peppered with good-for-you surprises like kale crisps and pumpkin seeds. Vegan kale dark chocolate bar, $10, and go to comparts.com to find that. And it's in a green wrapper with like tropical leaves on it, and they've got it. This wrapper open and the chocolate bar slid out, so we've got this rich dark chocolate that's almost black and sprinkled with seeds on the top. The third item, drink bigger. Sure, you could knock back an energy shot when a deadline looms, or you can skip the jitters and sip one of these velvety plant-based potions, each containing electrolytes from coconut water and at least 13 grams of protein. A Prey Variety 4-Pack, $20 at drinkapray.com. And they're in sort of hexagonal-shaped boxes. Now, the next item is It's Easy Being Green. This potted California-grown succulent can be shipped to your desk, where it'll cleanse cubicle air and brighten mopey Mondays. $10 for two at succulent.com. Studio, and it's in a little faceted planting dish on a wooden base. So it's the base is six-sided, and it has kind of an ombre blue to white effect on the ceramic planter and a little succulent, a little growing from it. And now the fifth item, leader of the pack. Here's to the ladies who bring lunch. This pretty porcelain bowl comes with a lid. It can even double as a plate if you prefer. And shut tight silicone straps to keep last night's lasagna from leaking. Villeroy & Bosch Modern Dining To-Go Dish in Rows, $45 at Vilroy-Bosch.com. So it's a white, very contemporary, smooth bowl. And the lid doesn't exactly look like a plate that's just setting on top. And the plate has that sort of rosy pink little geometric pattern and these crisscross black silicon straps to hold it all together. And item number 6, Blue Shield. Daily screen time can lead to strained, dried-out eyes, but these snazzy lenses, available with or without prescription, have blue light filtering technology built in. Spectacular. And these are some dark lavender Wayfarer frames. They're sort of a squarish look with the temples, the parts of the glasses that go over your ears being high on the frame, and then the piece that goes across the nose being high as well, but they're acrylic. Felix Gray Blue Light Blocking Opticals from $95. Shop felixgray.com. And we have one more page in the refresh section, and we see our exercise enthusiast standing on her head. We're looking at her from behind, and she has on a kind of dark peachy pink sports bra with lots of laces, straps that interlace and crisscross across the back, and some pale peachy pink bikini bottoms. Fitness-friendly skivvies. They've got your backside. What's a supportive sports bra without a pair of activewear undies to match? We found 4 that'll work as hard as you do. Your Style Bikini. Try Athleta Incognita Cheeky Bikini, $16 at athleta.com. This pair, the ones pictured, lives up to its name. It's practically invisible under tights and ultra lightweight. One tester wore it to yoga and felt like she was going commando. Plus, a strategically placed elastic band along the back prevents it from sliding while you make your moves. Your Style Thong. Try Lululemon Ever Essentials Thong. $18 at lululemon.com. Thongs mean no panty lines during your workout, of course, but this comfortable pair has an added fitness benefit. It's made from a blend of breathable cotton and quick dry elastane. Your Style Hipster. Try Patagonia Active Hipster, $24, patagonia.com. One tester said it best, quote, "They're moisture wicking, flattering, and able to hold up to lots of hot washes, a key quality in fitness underwear," end of quote. They're also treated with a stink-stopping solution that contains silver salt particles, which have been shown to fight odor-causing bacteria. And finally, Your Style Boy Shorts. Try Smart Wool PhD Seamless Boy Short, $40 at smartwool.com. They're soft and stretchy with a wide waistband that stays put without digging. And they're 68% merino wool, the moisture-absorbing fabric that helps keep you warm in winter, woohoo, for you outdoor runners, and cool in summer or your sweatiest spin class. And now under the heading Smart Cookie Dough, and we have a wooden mixing spoon with a dollop of chocolate chip cookie dough in it. Batches of sensible, safe-to-eat cookie dough have arrived on the snack scene, but how do they taste? We sampled 2 top brands, PS Snacks, $32.50 for 12, ps-snacks.com. The benefits: a base of chickpeas in the chocolate chip and peanut butter flavors, or black beans in fudge brownie, mean this gluten-free vegan dough has 5 to 6 grams of protein and 3 to 4 grams of fiber per 3-ounce cup. The verdict? Purists detected the beans and said the texture wasn't as creamy as the real deal, but many testers deemed it a viable option for a healthier dough fix, and the office health nuts fell in love at first bite. Just be sure to eat it straight from the fridge so it's super thick. The flavor favorite? Peanut butter, especially spread on pretzels. Fans praised the salty-sweet combo. And the second and last option, Because Cookie Dough. $49 for 12, becausecookiedough.com. The benefits, the classic flavors, chocolate chip, oatmeal chocolate chip, and double chocolate chip, are made with brown rice and gluten-free oat flours and coconut sugar. The result is a whole grain treat with 13 to 14 grams of sugar compared with about 22 in traditional dough. The verdict, while sticklers said this isn't your mom's batter, most people agreed that the velvety texture and sweetness level come close enough to cure a craving. The flavor favorite, double chocolate. As one tester put it, quote, "It's like a cross between a brownie and a cookie dough," end of quote. In other words, a match made in heaven. And on the sidebar, under the heading Well Oiled, they've become a natural beauty standard, but facial oils aren't one kind fits all. Quote, "People with acne or sensitive skin should use lighter options like jojoba or argan that are less likely to clog pores or cause irritation," end of quote, says North Carolina dermatologist Brooke Jackson, MD. On the dry side, she suggests heavier oils like marula or coconut. One or two dime-sized doses should have you covered. And then there's a picture of some of this facial oil and a dropper, and it's in this almost like a lava lamp shape. Store facial oil in a dark place. Sunlight can zap its beautiful benefits. Let's look now at the scarlet fever, the fiery crimson look. It's a look women have been wearing for centuries. So why do so many of us feel like we're still not getting it right? Our red letter guide with tips on finding the perfect shade and answers to O-Reader's lipstick questions will help you master this striking hue, which means you're one swipe away from a more powerful, confident, glamorous you. And all of that is written in white text on top of a smear of red lipstick on a white page. No one wants to see red when they smile, so after applying lipstick, pop your finger into the center of your mouth and pull it out to remove excess pigment from the inner edge of your lips, says makeup artist Joseph Carrillo. And then on the next page, which has a black background, and we see just the upturned chin of a woman with an ivory complexion, super white teeth, and Hollywood red lips. There's something written in white on this black background, undeniably alluring about a lush red lip. Strong women throughout history, from Cleopatra to Lucille Ball to Lupita Nyong'o, have wowed in this singularly bold shade. Yet what's gorgeous in the tube may look garish against your skin. What starts out on your lips can tediously bleed into the tiny lines around your mouth. Iconic? Yes. Inaccessible? It can certainly feel that way. But it's worth figuring out how to make red work for you. Celebrity makeup artist Nick Burrows, the man responsible for Nyong'o's vivid red carpet pout, says, quote, "Red lipstick is possibly the quickest way to add classic polish to your look and brighten your entire face. To me, it instantly imparts a sense of joy to your overall appearance," end of quote. And an invite to the Golden Globes is not required. Whether you're heading out to lunch with coworkers or a black tie wedding, the venue is always right for red. What you really need to pull off this power shade are a few savvy application tips. We polled Burrows and other pros for the best, and of course the most flattering color. We swiped dozens of shades to cherry pick the best for every skin tone. And when we turn the page, they have taken 60 tubes of lipstick, well, lined them up in rows, and opened them up, put them on a black top, tabletop, and we're staring at a picture straight down of them. 50 shades of red. Your ideal hue is here. So under the first column, it says fair. Lighter complexions typically look good in cooler options with blue undertones. Think cherry, raspberry, and scarlet. In the next row, medium. Bright shades with hints of peach, coral, or burgundy look radiant on you. For olive complexions, your ideal complement, a strong color with an orange or brown base like maroon, vermilion, or brick. For dark skin, you tend to look best in deep, rich shades of merlot and plum, but saturated brights like tomato pop too. And then universal. With both warm and cool undertones, classic reds are a fail-safe option for everyone. The burning questions, from your puzzled lips to our prose ears and back again. I love red, but it makes my lips appear thin. What can I do? First, pass on the mattes. A flat finish can make thin lips look deflated, says Brose. Instead, try a formula with a bit of sheen. Brose recommends first applying the color to lips, then blurring the edges with a cotton swab instead of making the outline too defined. Faded edges fake plumpness. Next, any thoughts on how to wear red and not feel clownish? It's all about finding your comfort level. Makeup artist Joseph Carrillo says, quote, take baby steps. Start with a sheer finish like a red lip stain or balm, end of quote. Of course, shade matters too, adds celebrity makeup artist Daniel Martin. The hue you're wearing is probably the wrong bright for you, he says. Go with something less vibrant and more neutral, like a brick red. Next, red always bleeds outside my lip line. How do I prevent this? First, prime your lips with a shine-free balm, suggests Brose. It's a makeup artist's secret because it gives the color something to cling to. Still bleeding? Try lining lips after you've applied your lipstick, says Martin. When you do it before, the emollients in lipstick may still slip outside the lines, he says, but applying liner after creates an even stronger border that helps seal in the color. Use a matching matte liner or a clear wax pencil. And next, how can I make it last without wearing one of those drying long wear formulas? It's true, long wear lipstick can end up feeling like paper mache. Carrillo suggests layering a matching regular lipstick underneath to make it softer and more comfortable, or try a long wear liner instead, says Brose. Color in your lips with the liner first to give it a fade-proof base, then top with regular lip color. Finally, do what pros like Martin do. Apply your lip color, blot. Dust lips with translucent powder, apply more color, and blot again. And finally, my skin is looking sallow as I get older. Can red brighten it up? Yes, and it's all about the undertone here. If your skin is fair, go for a blue-based red, which neutralizes yellow undertone, says Martin. If you have darker skin that's looking a bit drab, try an orange or violet red, berries and plums, to instantly perk up your complexion. And now we have a picture here of a woman with gray hair, and it's in a very short bob. And she has a fairly pale complexion, and she's wearing a red that actually looks a tiny bit pinkish. Think you can't wear red in your 50s and 60s? Think again. Just tweak the tone and texture. A deep red feels more elegant than a bright hue, says Carrillo. Also look for a hydrating formula which can help lips look more lively. Red hot highlights from the past in the sidebar. 51 BC. Cleopatra, said to crush insects to create the perfect red lip stain, is onto something. Carmine beetles still dye many lipsticks today. 1500s, Queen Elizabeth I reportedly makes a concoction including fig milk and egg whites to DIY her own crimson lip rouge, a bold move considering lip color is frowned upon by the church. 1770, caught red-mouthed. Some believe that women who wear lip rouge are practicing witchcraft, an offense punishable by death. A social ban in England discourages the wearing of makeup of any kind. 1912. Suffragists hit the streets of New York City to fight for their right to vote, wearing red lipstick to maximize their message, a la 2017's pink pussy hats. Makeup legend Elizabeth Arden purportedly hands out tubes herself. 1951. With the debut of TV's I Love Lucy, comedian Lucille Ball proves the high drama shade can have a funny side, too. 1952, Revlon introduces its Fire and Ice campaign, featuring a glamorous Dorian Lee in ruby lipstick and nail polish. Still iconic for its early feminist message that women can wear makeup for their own pleasure, not just a man's. 1990, Madonna's vampy lipstick during her Blonde Ambition tour inspires millions of 90s gals. Her MAC shade of choice, Russian Red, becomes a bestseller and remains so to this day. Red isn't just an after-dark shade. Making it work in the light of day comes down to texture. For an evening look, try a high-shine variety. Carrillo says when you need to be office-appropriate, stick to a classic matte or a satin finish. Just a hint of sheen. And under the heading Best Supporting Makeup, what you pair with your red lipstick can make or break its entire performance. Try these tips to let your lips shine. Break the rules. You don't necessarily have to choose between strong lips and strong eyes, says Barros, who has successfully done vibrant blue liner and red lips on Nyong'o. He says, quote, dramatic liner in black or brown or even fun colors can look great with red lips too, end of quote. Another way to play up eyes without overpowering your lips is by trying a smoldering bronze on your lids. He goes on to say, quote, it's more of a neutral smoky eye, end of quote. Apply bronze liner and smudge it with your finger. Finish with mascara. Remember your brows. This is especially important if you're wearing minimal eye makeup. Strong brows can balance red lips. Fill in sparse arches with a brow pencil that matches your hair color and brush into place with a spoolie, like a mascara wand, for brows. And lighten up. A full face, a foundation, and a bold lip can look a bit formal. For a more relaxed red, try tinted moisturizer. And use concealer only where you need it most, says Martin. And don't add blush. Pink cheeks and red lips could make you look too made up. Skip it for daytime, then glam up your skin at night with bronzer, suggests Carrillo. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.